listening to the Not Takes Fantasy Football Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to the Not Takes Fantasy Football Podcast. We are going to finish our week one recap. We're going to go over some important news that literally One Piece just broke before we got on here. And we will look back on some performances, both good and bad, from the previous week and determine, is this real or fake? Can you believe this? Or is this something you just need to temper and just take a deep breath on? So, as always, you're joined by your host, Bob and Dan. Dan, what up?
What up, Bob? How goes it, my man?
Man, it's I just got a lot crazier about a minute ago. How about yourself?
Yeah, no kidding, right? And how are you feeling after your kind of BS fantasy weekend, right?
Yes, I think I was up. Well, I mean, I had a very excellent weekend, except for the league that really matters the most to me, our league of record. And I think I was up by like 52 going into Monday night. And yeah, lost by half a point.
Ouch.
Hey, Matthew Barrett, if you're listening, can you talk to ESPN about any stat corrections, please?
There could be a defensive guy that got credited for a half a tackle he did not get. Or a defense, you know, that, you know, might need a correction. Anything you could do for my man Bob would be much appreciated.
that would be really very greatly appreciated. So, yeah, Dan, with that in mind, since we're sort of talking about how the late game sort of affected me, why don't we just go back in and start the show by talking the Sunday night game where the Pittsburgh Steelers got destroyed, is almost becoming per usual, by the New England Patriots, 33-3. And Dan, is there really anything of note you can take out of this performance? Because I can't for the Steelers.
No. No. I mean, I guess the only maybe little piece of comfort you might get is that you're – defense could stop the run to some extent, at least stop Sony Michel. And other than that, the offense looked flat. Ben didn't look like Ben. The Juju had a subpar game. James Conner had a subpar game. James Conner had a subpar game.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Dan. The Steelers at halftime should have just went to the choppa.
Yeah, with Jimmy Hoppa, and just left, and then said, we will not be back.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, well, the thing I don't know about Dante Moncrief is if he could even catch that choppa in time.
Yeah, he might drop it. I don't know. Boy, that was rough. I mean, for somebody who was going to be kind of like a fantasy dynamo, in terms of like a number two receiver, the targets were there. The targets were absolutely 100% there. But that's all.
And there
wasn't anything else.
I think that's what was rough about it for me, Dan, is he had the most targets of the team with 10. And then watching this game and you're like, is Vance McDonald hurt? Cause I don't see him getting targeted until garbage time in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that was very puzzling because I think, you know, Vance McDonald was another hot name in terms of fantasy production during the offseason and stuff. And you got nothing out of him, too, which is probably not what you were expecting. I know you were probably hoping for a lot more out of all those guys. At least I know I was. Not necessarily with my fantasy teams, but with my, my favorite NFL franchise.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, so for the Steelers, I would just say be calm. This offense over the past, like, 6 to 7 years has shown to be explosive. So the Patriots just have the Steelers number, in my opinion. And for the Patriots, really, I think the only one that was started with some majority of fantasy players out there that you would be disappointed with is Sony Michel, who only finished with 14 yards on 15 carries. Other than that, Dan, you're ecstatic with any of the options that you would have played in that game.
Yeah, Josh Brown came back, had I mean, Josh Gordon came back. I'm sorry, had a great game, got in the end zone. Edelman, super solid as usual. And Brady just carving us up left and right. Looked like he was, just the ripe young age of 37 at this point. I mean, it's just like, I don't know. It's the guy that he's like the guy that time forgot. Good for him. We routinely say, we're not Patriots, not necessarily our favorite team, but Tom Brady regularly is the greatest of all time. And he showed it last night for sure.
Yeah. Or
Sunday night. Sorry.
And Dan, we'll because I think we came into it saying, boy, what is Antonio Brown going to look like? We're going to table that conversation for when we go over the important news and notes. So let's move on to what could be the game of the year already. The Houston Texans lose to the Saints 30-28 on a last second 58-yard field goal by Will Lutz after Deshaun Watson took a two-play drive to seemingly win the game for the Texans. What a finish to that game.
Oh man, I mean, this was why we love the NFL. It's games like this where, it's just the most exciting thing you've seen all weekend. And both in terms of fantasy, I think you saw kind of what you expected out of the Saints. Kamara looked crazy solid. Basically just looked like he was ready to bust a long touchdown at any point. He looked unstoppable. Michael Thomas, solid. Traquan Smith looked great. I'm very intrigued with Traquan Smith. I made him trade for him earlier this year in the Dynasty League. So I'm kind of intrigued by him. Ted Ginn came back with a great game. And the other old head around, Drew Brees, solid performance, contributed to your devastating fantasy loss there, Bobby.
Yeah, it was the Brees and Kamara show that really got it jump started. And then we had a running back out in Oakland that we'll talk about that put the exclamation point on the kick in the balls for sure. So, but yeah, I mean, if you had any piece of the big three in New Orleans, you're great. If you had the guts to play people like Ted Ginn in deeper leagues, Traquan Smith, you're happy. Like you said, Latavius Murray got into the end zone. For the Houston side of thing, I mean, it's the deadly two. It's Deshaun Watson, 268, 3-1, ran one in on a beautiful play, so four overall touchdowns.
Oh, yeah.
DeAndre Hopkins, 8 for 111 and 2, just doing what he does. Kenny Stills gets in with 1 on 3 receptions. The confusing part was the running backs. Basically, the rushes were split 10 for 83 for Carlos Hyde, Duke Johnson, 9 for 57. But Duke did add 4 receptions. So I think that's what we're going to see. I think there could be an even split on the carries, but Duke is going to carry more value because of the pass catching duties.
Yeah, I thought Carlos Hyde looked solid too. I mean, he had some nice runs mixed in there, and I thought he was pretty impressive for somebody who just kind of just joined the squad not too long ago. So, pardon me. But yeah, I mean, Deshaun Watson showed why he remains one of the best QBs in the league too. His drive was just as short to take the Texans ahead, and then it almost seemed like the Saints were going to get have a repeat performance from the referees, stealing victories away from them. But everything seemed to have corrected itself. Karma came through for him in the end.
Exactly. And let's move on to the final game Monday night, where the Oakland Raiders look strong and beat the Denver Broncos 24-16. Derek Carr, ultra efficient, 22 for 26, 259 and 1. Josh Jacobs getting 99% of the rushing attempts, 23 for 85 and 2. Tyrell Williams, 7 for targets, 6 receptions, 105 and 1. Looked great in the lead role. And Darren Waller, the tight end, 8 targets, 7 receptions, 70 yards. Those 4 players look like they're going to be the foundation for this offense to move through.
Yeah, no kidding. Waller looks like I think he's about to break out, frankly. It's going to be a interesting kind of situation to kind of monitor, because now all of a sudden it feels like we've got a lot of spectacular tight ends in the league. Whereas last year, it seemed like the league was tight end wasteland. But, Waller intrigues me. And, man, Josh Jacobs just really came out firing right now. Just right off the bat, rookie running back having a great showing. And Derek Carr looked pretty darn good, Bob, right? Derek Carr? Boy, he looked good.
That's the type of offense he needs. I mean, he could stretch it in very small amounts, but the precision passing looked great to me, and that was primarily Waller. And then Tyrell was good for your long plays, and, I mean, it just looked like a strong, strong offensive performance, and I don't think you can say the same for Denver. Joe Flacco just... I don't know. 21 for 31, 268 and 1. Courtland Sutton, 7 receptions, 120 yards look good. Emmanuel Sanders, 5 for 86 and 1. But, Dan, as a Philip Lindsay owner, I wonder if there's any concern because the carries were, I mean, a 51-49% split. With Freeman going 10 for 56, Lindsay 11 for 43, but obviously Lindsay, almost like we said in the previous game, holds more value because he had 4 receptions for 23 yards. So I think Lindsay's going to hold that, but this is what I was concerned about in the offseason for Lindsay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, if you were watching this game last night, I think the consensus amongst at least the announcers are is that Lindsay is the more explosive player, because constantly they were saying, where's Lindsay? Why isn't Lindsay out there? Why isn't he out there? And it's a good question. Why wasn't he? But I think they want to talk themselves into Royce Freeman right now, but I think it's going to correct itself. I really like the Lindsay value. To me, he still looked like he was shot out of a cannon when he was getting that ball. I just like his big playability. I think it's going to come through again. I'm not super concerned about it. Give me 2 or 3 more weeks where the timeshare is clearer. Then I might say, ugh, maybe he's just simply a flex play. But I mean, if you were looking for him to be your RB1, your draft went a little bit haywire. So I'd like to see who else you have on your team, frankly.
Yeah, totally agree. So yeah, that was the quick recap of the Sunday night and 2 Monday night games. But Dan, let's go ahead and get into the important news and notes. If you've listened to the Not Takes Fantasy Football podcast before, you know just how much we love the draft app. We continually do best ball drafts throughout the year, and during the season, we have a weekly segment called Getting Drafty on Draft that drops every Thursday. Now we are proud to announce our affiliation with the best fantasy app out there. We would greatly appreciate if you would support our show by using our new link, draft.com/NotTakes. For those of you that don't already have a FanDuel or Draft account, signing up to Draft using that link gets you a free $3 entry to any contest of your choice after your initial deposit. We personally recommend a season-long best ball draft, and trust us, when you start, you're gonna be hooked. Once you get your account situated, come challenge myself or Dan on Draft. You can find me, Bob, on Draft at NotTakesBob. That's NotTakesBob. And you can find Dan at DJBenoit33. That's DJBenwa33. Once again, our link is draft.com/NotTakes. That's NotTakes. We can't wait to see you all get drafty on Draft with us. So yeah, Dan, let's just get right into the one that dropped. I mean, we literally stopped recording originally and just said, let's start over because this one threw us off in the middle of the recap. Antonio Brown is being accused of rape. There were 3 incidents of sexual assault in 2017 and 2018 against a woman who attended college with him. Obviously, Antonio says that he denies the allegations and will pursue all legal remedies, but this has been a pretty troubling offseason, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's just one of those things where when are the stories going to stop with this guy? But, you know, from a fantasy perspective, pardon me, I don't even know what to think because it's literally just dropped. I mean, in terms of what we just talked about earlier with how great the Pats look, adding him into the mix looked like a huge win for the Patriots. Now the question is there going to be discipline handed down from the league? You don't really know how that's going to play out. So right now it looks like he's playing, at least maybe, who knows? It's just like this saga never stops with him. I know we talked about it on Sunday after the games, like what a whirlwind weekend. And it looks like the whirlwind is just going to continue, Bob. I don't think you're really going to have clarity on this situation until you hear what Goodell's going
to
do.
I'm starting to be convinced, Dan.
Hopefully you have a backup plan in place like you did this past weekend in case he doesn't play, to make sure your fantasy lineup kind of stays on track, I suppose.
So, Dan, I'm starting to wonder, are we just gluttons for punishment in our dynasty league?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we just traded for him, and now all of a sudden we have this happen. I don't know. I'm honestly going to just kind of wait and see what happens with the league and the Patriots, too, frankly, because the Patriots are let's not discount the fact that maybe the Patriots are like, why are we going to deal with this when we have a championship-caliber football team? So it might not even be a situation where you're even going to have a league weighing in on this. The Patriots might just say, no, we're over this already, and cut their losses and move on with who they've got, who obviously didn't have a problem torching the Steelers on Sunday night.
Yeah, so we're going to wait and see. It probably puts into a little bit of a cloudy outcome to him playing week two, but we'll cover that when we record on Thursday. But Dan, let me go over the injuries and news and notes. I'm just going to read through them and then give a thought on what's the most important to you. Nick Foles, quarterback, placed on IR with designation to return with a broken collarbone. He's going to miss a minimum of 8 weeks. Running back wise, Tevin Coleman should miss multiple games with a high ankle sprain. Darius Geis, this is why I'd never touched him on any of my leagues, dealing with a meniscus injury, hopes to return in a few weeks, but the MRI is going to tell that. Joe Mixon looks like a low-grade ankle sprain. It doesn't necessarily rule him out for week two. Wide receivers, Sterling Shepard placed into the concussion protocol. It's all Saquon and Evan Engram at this point. Devin Funchess placed on IR with a broken collarbone. So, yeah, collarbones were taken to the woodshed this week. Juju, injured toe, but expects to be fine for week two. And Tyreek Hill, which I put last because I thought it would be the biggest news, but then AB, of course, trumped that, was he suffered a sternoclavicular, I hope I said that right, joint injury. Looks like he'll avoid the IR and miss a few weeks, but you know, it could be a few weeks. There was concern about possible IR. It sounds like he's going to avoid that, but this could be a very touchy situation. So, Dan, out of all the important news and injuries, which one's the most important or impactful for you?
Tyreek Hill. I mean, Tyreek Hill, that's a devastating one because Tyreek Hill is a guy who you build your fantasy team around. I know this year it was a little bit maybe hit or miss over the summer with him, but at the same time, I feel like that's probably the biggest news. Geis going down again, shocked by that. I really did not expect him to kind of be this injury prone. I mean, they were talking about how healthy he was and stuff like that. And yeah, that's a bummer. And the only other one that really kind of surprised me, you know, is, well, not surprised me, but kind of hit, is Tevin Coleman out several weeks. But for those Breda owners, hopefully you handcuffed him with Breda.
Yeah, or if you're our buddy Craig, you handcuffed him with every part of that 49ers backfield, and it looks like it paid off right now. So,
yeah, no kidding.
So, yeah, I just wanted to recap some news and notes there. Obviously, there are some key players in there that you're going to have to plan for in Tyreek, in Geis, in Coleman. But, Dan, let's get in and spend some time going over some week one performances and discuss if they are real or are they fake. If you listened to us last year, this is a familiar segment for our Tuesday night episodes where we look at the quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end position. We give a really good performance, we give a really bad performance, and then we try to decipher, is this something that's going to continue? Or what, like we said earlier, just take a breath. It was just one game. So, Dan, I'm going to start with quarterbacks and the good and, I mean, might as well call it great performance. Dak Prescott, 25 for 32, 405 yards, 4 touchdowns, 0 INT, perfect passer rating. Dan, in your estimation, is this real or is this a fake performance?
I actually think this is real. We talked about Dak a lot in the offseason about how we kind of thought that this was going to be the year that he put it all together. He had great numbers last year. He's got a full year now of Amari Cooper in the offseason. Zeke is back with a brand new contract. And Jerry Jones pretty much said, after that performance, get ready to get paid, Dak, because you're up next. And, boy, he deserves it. I think this is real. I had Russell Wilson in a league, in a couple leagues, and I'm frankly looking to maybe do a QB switch and maybe throw Dak in there and see kind of what he comes up with, because he looked solid, really, really solid. So I'm going to say it's real.
Yeah, Dan, I believe it's real too. Now, you're not always going to get 405 and four, but I could easily see him right around 290 to 315, and with the upside of three touchdowns at any given week. I mean, he really spread around his TDs to everybody. Cooper, Cobb, Witten, Jarwin. He could be playing behind the best offensive line in football. He just seems really comfortable, and although he won't say it, I mean, he's motivated to get paid like one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. So he has every motivation to play even more like this. He gets the Redskins in week two and should be another smash spot after Carson Wentz just destroyed that team. So, yeah, I think this is real. And if he's on the waivers and you're even somewhat like on the fence about your quarterbacks, I would pick him up immediately and start him every week with confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So conversely, Dan, let's go to the bad. And people thought this would be a shootout, one of the highest projected scoring games. And if you were the 49ers, you loved him playing quarterback for the other team. And that's Jameis Winston, 20 for 36, 194 through the air, one touchdowns, three interceptions, got sacked three times, 45.4 passer rating. And while there were some other bad performances with the Arians offense, with the matchup, with the weapons that he has, with the perceived lack of running game, thought this would be a great spot for him to come out and really show out. Dan, is this more of the real Jameis, or is this just a bad performance that you're going to say is fake and sort of calm down?
I think it's real. I think it's real. I mean, Jameis last year was in a battle with Fitzpatrick all season. All of a sudden, we're thinking just because Bruce Arians is the coach that now Jameis is going to have, you know, this big breakout season. I'm not buying it. I know people were thinking that, you know, Arians was going to be able to coach him up and get something out of him that nobody else could. But frankly, I think we were pretty much talking about last year saying that if he didn't have a good season this year, that he might be out of the league because, you know, his kind of goodwill tour is kind of over at this point. It's time for you to earn your next contract. And he hasn't done it. He's got the best tools he had, and it was a subpar performance all around for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I'm going to say it's real, but he could surprise some people. But I'm just not sold on this. I'm not sold on Jameis, you know, coming out and being this elite fantasy option this year at this point.
Yeah, I think you're echoing a lot of the same sentiments I have. I'm going to call it real. Now, don't get me wrong, you will get some massive performances from Jameis throughout the year, but you're going to be riding a roller coaster, it looks like, the entire year. This was a spot where he should have had a massive game for you, and he did not. Now, I look back on it, Bruce Arians' first year in Arizona, 2013, he coached Carson Palmer, who eventually put it together in that offense, but in the first year had 24 touchdowns and 22 interceptions. 2 years later, Palmer had 35 touchdowns and really cut his interceptions down. I believe it was 11. I must have deleted my note, but it was very low compared to his first year. Now, what I think affects Jameis is you could probably see something like that with 28 touchdowns and 25 interceptions.
Maybe.
Yeah, but I don't think he has the time like Carson Palmer did to where he could, because they've got to make a decision on him. So I don't want to get too far ahead, but yes, I think this is real. I think you're going to ride a roller coaster. He could very well come out and throw for 403 touchdowns this week with all the weapons that he has against the Carolina Panthers. But the interceptions is just, it's part of his game that he just cannot get rid of. So until he can change that, yeah, this is, you have to look at this as the real Jameis Winston going forward.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
So, Dan, let's go ahead and move to the running back selection. And there were a lot of great ones. But one that really stood out to me was Austin Eckler. 12 rushes, 58 yards. That's 4.83 yards per attempt. One touchdown. Seven targets, six receptions, 96 yards, 16 yards per reception. Two touchdowns. Dan, is this the real Austin Eckler or is this a fake Austin Eckler?
I think this is the real Austin Eckler. I mean, this is kind of what you were getting with him last year, not maybe not to this extent, but when Melvin Gordon was out, you were getting production out of Austin Eckler. And I know they were just playing the Colts, but still, this was an outstanding game for Eckler. I thought an outstanding game for the Chargers offense. I think this is real. I think you can count on him coming out and doing this, not this much work, but close to it every single week until Gordon comes back. And then the question becomes, once Gordon's back, you can't just not play Austin Eckler. You can't just take away, just put him on the shelf and kind of say, whatever. Kind of like with Tarik Cohen. Like, you had Josh Gordon and now Tarik Cohen showed up. I mean, you had Josh Howard. And
Jordan Tarik Howard
Cohen showed up.
You're stuck Jordan with the Josh.
Josh's. Oh, my God. It looks like I'm joshing you. Jordan Howard and then Tarik Cohen shows up. And now you're like, okay, well, what do we do with these guys? And I mean, it's going to force the San Diego's hand a little bit, because it's just one of those things when Eckler plays like this, you can't just say, okay, thanks, Austin. Now it's just Melvin Gordon all day, every day from now on. That's not how it works.
Yeah, Dan, I mean, it sounds like we're agreeing a lot, and it's because we are. I mean, this is what he did last year when he had a chance. So last year in the passing game, he had 39 receptions, 404 yards, three touchdowns. He can get it done with chunk plays in both facets of the game. I don't think you even really need him to rush for a ton of yards like he did, because he's going to give you so much in the passing game.
Right.
I mean, and any concerns of a true split with Justin Jackson?
No.
He had 48 snaps to 16, a 75-25 split. So because Eckler is, and this is what you target when you want running backs on your team, is not only do you get it done in the running game, you get it done in the passing game. And this is what this guy offers. So yeah, to your point, even if Melvin Gordon does come back, they cannot just tell this guy, you're going back up to backup duties. I think Melvin Gordon is really hurt, his value's hurt by this performance.
Oh yeah, I think he was probably hoping that they would come out and either lose or Eckler would or win, and they had no running game and Philip Rivers had to throw it 1,000 times to Keenan Allen. But no, I mean, the offense just didn't miss a beat. It looked great.
Yeah, and Dan, for the bad performance, there were quite a few from studs, quote unquote. But I wanted to go back to Thursday, because this was a guy that had a huge amount of hype going into the regular season off of his performances in camp and in the preseason. That's David Montgomery. Six rushes, 18 yards, three per attempt, one target, one reception, 27 yards. Are you believing this is the real David Montgomery, or is this a fake? And just be patient.
Yeah, I think this is a fake, and you be patient. Let's just not forget that this is a rookie still. We're not all Josh Jacobs, and that's just not the way it works for everybody. And I think that the Green Bay's defense was better than advertised. And they just kind of had the Bears number that week. I think he'll still break out. I think he'll be a good flex play, RB2. He's not going to be an RB1 status for me quite yet. But I do think that he probably comes back, bounces back a little bit. And the big question will be, frankly, in my opinion, the question with the Bears is, what's the Tarik Cohen real value here? Because they want to get Montgomery involved. And I think he's better than advertised, or better than he was this week. I just don't know how that's going to affect the Tarik Cohen productivity.
Yeah, so Dan, I'm also going to say that's fake. We're really on the same page here. Now, we look at this game. He finished third in running back snaps. Cohen, 51. Mike Davis, 41. Montgomery, 28. That becomes a 70-56-38% breakdown. But what I keep coming back to is, if you just watch the game and you go back and you look at it, he looked like the best running back on the team. In my opinion, what I think they should do and what I think they will do is looking back on this, is Montgomery's going to take the load as far as rushing the ball. And if I were them, why not put Tarik Cohen as a pure slot receiver with two to three rushes every game? I mean, he can catch the ball. He shows that he can break long plays at any given moment. But it looked like Mike Davis has that type of ability. He was making people miss. He was getting yards where there weren't any. Just by the eye test, I think eventually you're probably going to have to be patient. So you might want to bench him this week and see how it goes. But I think eventually, if you could just hold through with this guy, he's going to pay it back for you in a big way later this year. And you'll be thankful that you didn't drop him on a tilt move after 1 week. So,
for sure.
Boy, good. Dan, we could go through really any of the rookie wide receivers, but I went with a third-year wide receiver that really didn't show much of anything through the first 2 years, and that's John Ross. 12 targets, 7 receptions, 158 yards. That equals 22.6 yards per reception, 2 touchdowns. Dan, what do you make of John Ross? Is this real or fake?
I'm going to cheat a little bit. I'm going to say this is going to be real for like 3-4 more weeks until AJ Green comes back. But, you know, I still think that there's room for two receivers in this offense because there was room for AJ Green and Tyler Boyd. So there's room for these guys to kind of have big time games. Andy Dalton is a serviceable quarterback. Maybe he's not the best fantasy option, but he gets it done on the field, which translates to good numbers for your running backs and your receivers, and maybe even your tight end and Tyler Eifert. So I think with some hesitation, I will say it's real for a couple of weeks, but I do not expect him to kind of be this fantasy stud for the entirety of the season. I think it could continue until AJ Green comes back. But once Green comes back, it's kind of going to be business as usual, in my opinion. I still think Tyler Boyd's the number one. This was just a nice game from John Ross.
Yeah, I'm saying it's a fake, and it's for a lot of the reasons that you provided, Dan, is AJ Green's coming back at some point. So while this could be a short-term solution, it's not like I'm rushing out and blowing my fab budget to get this guy off of performance.
Right.
In the previous two seasons, he's combined for 21 receptions and 7 touchdowns. And really, all of that was last year. I think in his rookie season, he had negative fantasy points. So now, a lot of this could be Marvin Lewis and his coaching style. Maybe it is the coaching change, but he did play 82% of the snaps, so that's positive. He led the team in targets with 12, very positive, and finished second in receptions with 7, very positive. Could this be a third-year breakout happening? It could be. Could be based on the new system. But yeah, once A.J. Green comes back, I think the pecking order is A.J. Green, it is Tyler Boyd, and then it's John Ross. And you can't tell me that Andy Dalton can support 3 strong wide receivers in fantasy. I can't buy this at this time. So I say it's fake, but if you need a couple week stopgap, I wouldn't blow my budget on it. But if you feel like it, I could see why, but I'm not buying
it. For sure.
And Dan, let's go to our bad wide receiver performance, and that's Brandon Cooks of the Rams. 6 targets, 2 receptions, 39 yards. Well, it was a healthy 19.5 yards per reception. It was a very disappointing outing. So, Dan, real or fake on Brandon Cooks?
Fake. I mean, it's not because we're Brandon Cooks owners, but I think it's just fake. I think this was just a situation where it was just kind of they were taking what the defense was giving them, and there was just a lot more action for Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp. I still think that Cooks has a bounce back, but remember, there's a lot of mouths to feed on this Rams offense. So I don't necessarily expect him to be this bad. You could get a couple duds here and there, but this is fake. He'll have a bounce back week. He's still arguably the biggest big play threat in the receiving game for the Rams at this point.
Yeah, I'm going to call it fake too, but maybe this is the year where he finally doesn't bring that back end wide receiver one production. And to me, a lot of it is Robert Woods is really good and Cooper Kupp is one of the favorites of Jared Goff. So I think this could be a year where Brandon Cooks, you're banking on more of those big plays. Now, he'll have the occasional over 100 yards on like five or six receptions with a touchdown. But I think this might be a year where you're banking on more big plays. I mean, if you look at the snap breakdown, he was out there 92% of the snaps. So it's not like he wasn't out there. Goff had a bad game. Carolina's defense could be better. But one thing of concern, which is sort of why I'm saying it's fake, but tempering the overall expectation, is he was third in the pecking order with targets. Woods had 13, Kupp 10, Cook 6. So that's a little concerning. Yep. And I don't know if that trend's necessarily going to change very much. Obviously, at any given point, either one of those three can lead, but a little bit concerning when you look at it first glance. But I say it's a fake as well. And Dan, let's close things up with our tight ends. And there were quite a few great tight end performances, but we want to talk about a rookie, because normally it takes rookies a long time to develop as a fantasy force. It might even take a full year, but TJ Hockenson is looking to bust that myth. 9 targets, 6 receptions, 131 yards. That's 21.8 yards per reception and 1 touchdown. Dan, are you believing TJ Hockenson is the real deal, or is this just a random blow-up performance in week one?
I would say that the hype was there in terms of dynasty play. He was one of those top targeted guys. But I'm going to have to say I'm saying this is a little fake right now. I think this was maybe more of a bad defense. I don't necessarily love that Arizona defense. I think it's a flash in the pan. I think he'll have good games. I did not see him as like the second coming of Gronk. But, you know, if you're looking for a serviceable tight end with upside, I think this is a guy that you can look to. I'm not counting on him getting over 100 in a touchdown every week. I think he'll have a few catches. He's part of the offense. But I think they want to run the ball more. Kerryon Johnson had a pretty bad game. And there's still some really good receivers there. So I'm tempering my expectations and saying it's fake for right now.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's real, but not to this regard. I think you're looking at more like the 4 to 50 with a chance of a touchdown, which in the tight end sort of position that we're at is good for a tight end one and every week. So I'm going to say it's real, but scaled down a little bit. He already passed Jesse James in the tight end pecking order, playing 64 snaps to James 51. He finished second on the team in receptions of the day with 6. Really showed the ability to make the big plays for Stafford when he needed them. I think this could be a situation where, similar to Amendola, this could be like a safety blanket type of player that Matt Stafford could lean on to make big plays. He didn't use Ebron to the ability that I thought he would. But they invested a very high draft capital on a guy and really showed out. I do think your point is well taken with the Arizona defense being suspect at best, I guess is the best way to say it. But I like him to be that back end top 10 type of tight end. So I'm going to say it's real, but scale down. It's not going to be 6 for 131 and 1. So, and Dan, let's move on to our final real or fake, and we sort of saved it and teased it for later because we didn't want to get in too much detail. Vance McDonald, 4 targets, 2 receptions, 40 yards. Now, if you want to get a positive, that's 20 yards per reception, but I don't know if that's I don't know if it's really the way you want to look at things. But Dan, is this poor performance real or fake for Vance?
I desperately want to say it's fake, but I am concerned that maybe it's real. I will say it's fake. I think he's going to be better than this. I think the offense overall is going to be better than this. I mean, Juju had a terrible game, and I think both of us, if we had put Juju in this segment, we would say fake. I think this was a down performance just in general from the Steelers offense, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's fake too. And to your point, you really surmised it all. I think it's just a dud from the entire offense. And I do think what comes out of this is they look at Moncrief and say, you dropped, I believe it was recorded 4 passes, you dropped out of 10 targets. I think they look at that and say, look, if we're going to target that intermediate range, this is where maybe we get Vance the ball more than we do Moncrief. So
right.
The concern was his production was the definition of garbage time. All the production came really late in the game. It's surprising that he wasn't involved earlier with all the drops that I referenced earlier, but if you're going to look at it, he was out there 71% of the snaps. So it's not like he wasn't on the field, but for some reason, was it the Patriots' defense? Was it Ben flustered for some reason? I don't know, but I think they look at this and say, look, Vance could be a key contributor. But I'm wondering if this is almost like last year where you're going to get these peaks and valleys with him that you might just have to ride with. But I don't think it's going to be this bad. So, yeah, I'd say a fake moving forward. So and for the Steelers' sake, I hope they get him more involved. But yeah, that's our first look at the real or fake segment. This will be a reoccurring Tuesday night segment where we'll look at those performances each week and try to decipher what you could do moving forward or your expectations. Dan, I want to go ahead, though, and move on to a few Twitter questions that I threw out at NotTakesFF on Twitter. So let me go ahead and pull those up and we'll read through a few of those.
Sounds great.
The first question comes from at JasonQuinn1992. Dan, would you drop either DeeDee Westbrook or Curtis Samuel for DeSean Jackson, DK Metcalf, or Cortland Sutton half PPR?
I would drop either of those guys for DeSean Jackson, without a doubt. I think where DeSean Jackson was going to be maybe a flex player at best, a lot of people thought. I think he emerged as a legitimate wide receiver too, with just huge play potential. Carson Wentz has a legitimate deep threat now. I think you're just going to get more games like this out of DeSean Jackson. So I would drop either of those guys for DeSean Jackson. I do like DK Metcalf, but if I can get DeSean Jackson, I'm getting him. Grab him now. If he's on the wire in your league, grab him now. That's a guy who could potentially win leagues and win weeks for you by himself.
Yeah, I went the same route, but I said DeeDee Westbrook, and that's just with the uncertainty with Gardner Minshew. And then you got Conley and then the man-eating Chark out there as well. It's just the uncertainty with the quarterback and then possibly more wide receivers than we thought on that team. But yeah, I could see if you wanted to drop either or. But yeah, do what you can to get DeSean Jackson on your team, Jason, and do it right now. Next one, Dan, this comes from Luke McCaddy, Comb the McCaddy, at Mook LC Caddy. Would you do a trade Diggs and TJ Hockenson for Juju Smith-Schuster?
It depends on what side I'm on. If I'm on the side that is getting Diggs and Hockenson, meaning I'm giving up Juju, no, I'm not doing that. I would do it if somebody came to me and was like, hey, I'll give you Juju for Hockenson and Diggs, I would say, yeah. I mean, I'm like, before you have a chance to run this by anyone else in our league, yeah, let's just do it right now. Because that's a crazy deal. So if I'm getting Juju, I'm doing it. If I'm giving up Juju, I am not doing that.
Yeah, whatever side gets Juju, that's the decision you go with, Luke. So hopefully that helps there. Dan, Trevor at HokieHWN. Are you playing DeSean Jackson, Tyrell Williams, or Crowder are you targeting DeSean Jackson, Tyrell Williams, or Crowder on waivers this week, full PPR league?
It would be probably just that order for me. DeSean Jackson, Tyrell Williams, and then Crowder. Crowder, I think, is going to be good in a PPR league because I think there's going to be a lot of catches there for him. But I think the big playability I love out of DeSean Jackson, again, how he's on waiver wires, I don't understand. But get yourself some DeSean Jackson now, right meow.
Yeah, and I actually lean Tyrell in this situation because he looks like he is the one. But I also said, love D-Jax. Is there any way to get both in the lineup? So if you could somehow get both. But yeah, I mean, we love DeSean Jackson. I mentioned Tyrell Williams. The PPR sort of changes that for me. But I think DeSean can also make up for not catching so many because he'll just go for long plays and touchdowns there. So
for sure.
Let me see if we have any others here, Dan, that I want to go over. And this one is good. Let me see. It just came through. Pick three to start this week, Dan. This comes from Oct, $B, Childish, at Childish October, Oct, I guess. Interesting. Pick three to start. Pick three to start. A.B., Edelman, Sony Michel, Sammy Watkins. I want Edelman and Watkins just because, well, we don't know if AB's playing, and I don't know if Sony Michel, he could have a big game this week, but give me Edelman and Watkins. What say you?
Yeah, I think with the Tyreek Hill injury, Sammy Watkins' value just went through the roof because everybody wants a piece of that Chiefs offense. And I agree. Edelman's Mr. Consistent. And with this news that just came out, you don't know what's going to happen. Thus is fantasy football. You just have no idea how this is all going to play out. So consistency, I think, is the game name of the game here. And I think with Hill out, Watkins is a clear choice with Edelman a close second. Sony Michel concerns me because I thought he was going to be the lead back in that backfield. And now there's a lot of people showing up, like Rex Burkhead, who a lot of people never even considered this offseason. So,
yep,
there's a lot to kind of like ponder in that.
Yeah, so thanks for the questions, guys. Remember, it's at NotTakesFF on Twitter. Keep them coming every Tuesday. We'll throw that out there. But Dan, let's end it with doing a quick Thursday night preview. So the Thursday night game is a divisional showdown where the Buccaneers are going to the Carolina Panthers. I think this is a game where really both offenses could bounce back here. So really, if I've got, you know, your Mike Evans, your Chris Godwins, your O.J. Howards, I'm playing them as normal. And for the Panthers, you're getting Cam in there. Christian McCaffrey's an auto start to me. And I think D.J. Moore and Curtis Samuel could have some nice bounce back performances. Dan, what say you?
I mean, I'm never not starting Christian McCaffrey. I also like DJ Moore as a bounce. Yeah, I think DJ Moore had a decent game. Curtis Samuel, I think, could probably get back on track. I think the biggest question here is will Cam Newton get back on track? I think this is a big time subpar game for Cam Newton. Thursday night games are hit or miss in terms of scoring, so I don't know how much action you're going to get. But there's a lot of – it's weird because you would think there's not this much pressure this early in the season. But I think there's pressure on Jameis Winston, frankly. I think he needs to have a good game, or there's going to be people saying, at least with Fitzmagic we were scoring. At least with Fitzmagic we were putting points on the board. So he needs to have a big bounce back. And I think Cam Newton plays better than he did on Sunday because I don't think – the Tampa Bay defense is nearly as good as the LA defense. And so if it's up to me, you're playing your studs for Tampa Bay, hoping that they can hit. But give me all the Panthers this week, all the time. I'm hoping we get our first 100-100 game this week, Bobby, out of CMC.
It very well could happen, and it's really deceiving. So, like, you know, our league of records on ESPN, which is an opening for right now, thanks ESPN. But the Buccaneers look like one of the toughest matchups if you just go on the opponent matchup metric that they have. But then you remember back to it, it's like, oh, yeah, Jameis Winston threw multiple pick sixes and multiple interceptions. So San Francisco really didn't have to do much except let their defense play for them. So I don't think that's going to be the case. Now, will Jameis throw interceptions? Sure will. But I think Carolina can combat that at worst with Christian McCaffrey just running all over them. So, yeah, give me all the Panthers. Give me your two skilled wide receivers and your tight end for the Buccaneers. I think this will be a little more of a high-scoring game. Just because it is the divisional matchup, it is two offenses that should put points up on the board. But yeah, this is a matchup that's really going to tell you a lot early in the year about these two quarterbacks moving forward to me. So it's something to keep in mind. But Yeah, Dan, that's our Tuesday show. We try to jam a lot into smaller segments, so we really capture a lot of what's either gone on in the past or what's going on currently with injuries, news, notes, things of that nature. But, Dan, if you're ready, I'm ready to close up the show, man.
Let's do it.
So yeah, just a heads up, this Thursday, I'm going to be flying solo, so we won't have our Getting Drafty on the Draft App segment. Danny, I know your wife had a loss in her side of the family, so I know you guys will be taking care of business there. So I'll run the show and send the condolences Sarah's way for sure, and we'll get back to it on Sunday.
Much appreciated, my man.
Yeah, so as always, like we say, follow us Twitter and Instagram at NotTakesFF. That's NotTakesFF. Love the questions. I'm going to try and get out there Sunday again before the game to answer any lineup questions that you have, but feel free to drop anything on us at any point, and we'll make sure to get back to you there. If you're more willing to send an email, nottakesff@gmail.com, we'll answer any emails that are sent our way. You can find our podcast homepage, anchor.fm/nottakesff. That's anchor.fm/nottakesff. You can listen to us there, follow us there, find links to the 12 platforms that we're on. So if you have a platform of choice, any of the major ones we're on, they provide a link directly there. If you listen to us directly on the Apple Podcast platform, give us 15 seconds of your day. Give us a five-star rating and review. It really helps us out big time. We appreciate anybody that's willing to take the moment to do that. But any platform that you're on, make sure you subscribe. We're back to doing 3 episodes a week, so we want to make sure you get them as soon as they drop. And Dan, go ahead and shout out your brother to end the show in style like we always do.
Yeah, it's a song called Alma. It's done, performed, compose anything that you could think of that he'd have done with this thing, he did it himself. He's a very talented guy. If you like his song, if you like this type of music, check out his SoundCloud. Get a lot of stuff out there. He's That Dude Tom. And big shout out to my bro on letting us use that song. Much appreciated, my man.
Yeah, so Dan, I know we'll catch up over the weekend as you take care of your family duties there with your wife. For everybody else that's listening, I will catch you on Thursday with the rankings. Make sure to keep an eye out Wednesday. We're going to drop the link to our rankings webpage. But until then, I will talk to you later.